1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock. Now, we all know that hospitals had to take extraordinary steps to protect patients and staff, indeed, during the height of the COVID pandemic. But many people are now questioning if those rules that stopped visitors from coming in to see loved ones in hospital, if they need to be quite so stringent. Philip Nolan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Good. How are you? And how's your uncle, Philip?
He's in good form, Katie. He's in good form. I was talking to him yesterday, so he's handy enough in there, like, you know what I mean? But he's been in since around Easter time. He got COVID over Easter, and he went in and to one of the big Dublin hospitals. And it's basically just, he hasn't seen anybody. We met him last week for a few minutes, but we were the first person he's seen since he went in, basically, like, do you know what I mean? I think it's very unfair, Katie.
What age is he?
He's 74 years of age. He worked hard. He worked hard all his life. He looked after his father. And then suddenly this horrible thing called COVID-19 affected him and hit him hard. And thank God he got through it. They looked after him great in hospital. And they're looking after him as well in there now at the moment, like, do you know what I mean? But he's missing missing the gentle touch, Katie. He's missing the love of his family. We met him last week for the first time since he went in.
So again, just remind people, he's been in for how long?
He's in since Easter, so about 3 months, but over 3 months, 3 to 4 months now, he's in there now.
He had absolutely no visitors at all in that time until last week.
Not one, Katie. Like, he hasn't seen any of his family. We were the first people he has seen since he went in, since the day he was taken in by ambulance. And that's the sad thing about it. Like, and he's not alone in it, Katie, either. There's other people in other hospitals. I've been contacted by people in my own community who couldn't get in to see their son, couldn't get in to see their daughter. One man rang me yesterday when he heard your piece yesterday, your programme yesterday, that you were going to cover the story. And he rang me and said they haven't seen their father since he went in. He's got dementia, sadly he's got dementia. And that they're trying to get in. And they won't let people in. I can't understand, like, what the problem is, like.
And going back to your uncle, Philip, what kind of a shape is he in now after, you know, going through COVID and being on his own for that length of time?
He's lost a lot of weight. He's lost a hell of a lot of weight. We were disappointed at the amount of weight he's lost. Like, it took a hell of a lot out of him. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, his fingernails need to be cut. And he can't cut them. They can't cut them. Like, under health and safety grounds, they can't cut them. His hair needs to be cut. And stuff like that. And the minute he arrived into the room last week, like, I'm 53 years of age, Katie, and he walked into the room. Oh, sorry. Sorry. He walked into the room, and he gave me a hug. He says, where have you been? And I said, we can't get in to see you. We can't get in to see you. That hurt. That he thought that we didn't care about him or whatever. But we just need to show a bit of humanity here and show a bit of love and a bit of respect. And I respect everything the hospitals are doing, the HSC are doing. They're doing great work. But they just need to consider the people in hospital at the moment and the love and the myth that they're missing from their families and stuff. And I just think it's unfair, Katie. Like, do you know what I mean? It's unfair.
And I mean, obviously, anyone would be very emotional around that. Would you have been very close with your uncle?
Yeah, we would have. Like, as his one brother left, and his brother, he looks after him as well, and all his nieces and nephews. He's very lucky to have us to look after him. We would have been over with him twice, three times a day. My children would have been there. We would have took care of him, brought him down to the shops, walked down to the church. You'd love going down to the church to meet people, to talk to people, talk to the priest. He had a great belief in St. Charles of Mount Argus. And we would have been over with him every single day. And from that, I got COVID and I couldn't get over to him. So the rest of my family stood in and they looked after him. And then suddenly he went over one day. He was on the floor and he got taken away with COVID, and we haven't seen him since. And it's just it's a big hole in their hearts.
And when you say you walked in and he hugged you, did he honestly, do you think honestly believe that he had abandoned him? That was it not explained to him what the story was?
He's 74, Katie. Like he's not used to modern technology. I think he's had one Skype call. He didn't know what the hell it was. Do you know what I mean? Like, and really, his first reaction was he hugged us. He says, "Where have you been?" Because he's gone from seeing us every day to not seeing us at all. Not seeing anybody in there. Like, do you know what I mean? Nobody coming into him. Nobody allowed going into him like he used to in the hospital. And he didn't understand. And I was trying to say, look, they're keeping everybody out because of the COVID. And he says, yeah, but I've got me vaccine. So why can't you come in?
Does he have his vaccines?
Oh, he has, yeah. His vaccines. He got both vaccines, like, do you know what I mean?
And are you vaccinated? Would you be vaccinated yourself?
Yeah, I got vaccinated. Thank God I got vaccinated. And the great work done by the people in the vaccination centre, the nurses and the doctors out there. And thank God I got my second dose last week. But all we're asking, Katie, is simple, right? We're not asking for 10 people to be sitting around somebody's bed, right? I'm asking whoever is in charge of the hospitals, either the HSC or the people running the hospitals, to let people in for half an hour a week or an hour a week. They can wear, we'll all wear PPE. We can do whatever they want. We can meet behind the screen like with the nursing homes. And just show a bit of humanity, right? Show a bit of humanity, because I feel that the people in the hospitals have been forgotten about here. The pubs are opening. The events are coming back. There's people going out for meals to hold up. But what about the poor devil that has nobody, or has one daughter, or has one son who can't get up, can't get in to see them, or are sitting there going, maybe they don't want me anymore. Maybe they've left me anymore. They don't. Do you know what? That's all I'm asking for, Katie. It's not much to ask for.
It's not, and I know, because we've heard, and we've there's been reports done on it of the impact that loneliness will have, particularly on people who maybe has dementia, or that the circumstances can't be explained to them, or they can't totally understand why it is suddenly that all their family and all their friends have disappeared from their world.
Exactly, and the staff in there, are doing their utmost to keep them safe. And I appreciate that. And I'm the first one to acknowledge the work of the staff and the HSC and the work that they put in over this COVID-19 pandemic, over the cyber attack, the whole lot. All I'm asking for is for them to say, okay, look, every Tuesday between 2 and 3, you can go and visit your uncle. Every Tuesday between 1 and 2, you can go and visit your mother. There was a woman dropping in clothes, Katie, a few weeks ago, and she hasn't seen her son, right, since January. And he's in there since January. And she's standing there crying in the car park, handing in the clothes that you have to go to. The clothes will go to the young lad up in the ward. And that break your heart just looking at that. And why can't we go in to see people? Give us a reason why we can't go and visit our family.
Well, I suppose, without stating the absolutely obvious, Philip, we know the reasons that the rules were put in place in the first place, people were bringing COVID in from the outside. But
Katie,
I suppose
now that staff
are generally vaccinated in all these hospitals, and now that, as you say, a lot of patients, in particular people of your uncle's age and vintage, would have both their vaccines at this stage as well. What are they saying to you in the hospital until, you got in to see him? What were the circumstances that you got in?
Basically, we got in to see him because we had arranged a meeting with his medical team. And we sat down with the medical team about, okay, so when can we get him out? Where can he go? What can he do? How can we do this? And so on like that. And so we sat down, had that discussion with them, and then that all went well. And then they said, okay, would you like to see him for a few minutes? We said, yes, of course. So he came in, right, Katie? Mm-hmm. And he stood at the door and his face was beaming. Mm. It was unbelievable. Just to see his face, just to see the smile. And you say to yourself, that's what's missing in the care. I said this at the meeting. That's what's missing in the care is that warm touch of the hand, the rub of the hand or the holding of the hand to reassure them that you'll get through this, that things will happen here. You're okay. We're going to get you home. We're going to get you sorted. They're looking after you here. That maybe is the final missing link of the care plan. And maybe that's what needs to be looked at.
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing, because there was a huge amount of publicity around restrictions on maternity hospitals and partners not being allowed in for scans and for early part of labour, and I think it's still an issue for some people. And what we learned from that it wasn't the HSE were saying, yeah, you can do it. The department, the health minister were all saying, yeah, we think it's okay now. But individual hospitals were putting their own rules in place, they were saying there was individual situations that they had to cater for.
Yeah. See, it was raised in the Senate. A senator from our area who's in their constituency, Mary Searle Carney, raised it in the Senate a few weeks back, and she had to raise it again yesterday. And we shouldn't have to keep tormenting our politicians to keep raising this issue. It should be just a case of, okay, look at the nursing homes. Like, how good has that worked out with people going in? Like, to be in a nursing home and somebody to come in is a great lift to them. And think of those people as well, because they've been through the mill as well as the people in the hospital. So what we're asking for is parity with the nursing homes, that we could go in and have a visit. And if it's behind a screen, Katie, grand, it's behind a screen, but at least you can have a chat. You can tell them what's happening on the road. And that will help their mental health. It'll help their physical health, because they'll have to stand up to walk out with you or to walk in with you. Like, at the moment, all I can see is that you can go in for outpatients, but you can't make that extra 6 feet up to the ward. Well, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I suppose they might think, well, you know, a lot of people are not, thankfully, don't spend, you know, the length of time in hospitals that they would be facing into in a nursing home. But there are people like your uncle who are there for weeks and months.
Yeah.
And that's a very long time to go without somebody holding your hand.
It's a massive time to actually sit there. And again, I was saying to your researcher, imagine being in the hills of Tipperary or something and you went into hospital and where's my family? Where's my family gone? Why is there nobody coming in to see me? Why am I only getting parcels from my family? And like, I was in hospital 3 times over COVID. I had once with COVID and I broke my leg, Katie, just at the end of the last COVID stuff. So, like, I was in there for days. I was in for COVID for 2 weeks, but I was able to cope because I could talk to the kids on the phone and look at them and do WhatsApp with them and all that. Older people can't do that, or they're not able to do it. Or if you have dementia, like my neighbour, who's been in there for months, and his family can't get in to see them. And the hospital have said, yeah, that's grand, but it's the manager of the ward that won't let them in. So who empowered these people to say, no, you can't come in? Like, we're setting back on all our restrictions. I'm looking out my window here in my office, and I can see people out walking in trees and forests. And I go out the gate and I see them sitting around at a pub. So why can't I go in for 20 minutes each week even, just to say, listen, this is what's happening on the road. Have a chat with and help them get better quicker.
Yeah, you've got to think that it would help somebody recover and come back to themselves. I know, and we should say now, and we know because we saw so much of it earlier on at the height of this, that staff in hospitals were amazing with people who couldn't have their loved ones with them, even, you know, at end of life care you know, they had to step in really difficult situations, and they were amazing. And I really want to put that out there.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
And,
totally,
you know, making that connection and putting them on FaceTime and making those calls. Yeah. But as you say, there will be people who just won't get anything out of those calls.
Yes. And really, like, again, if you're suffering from dementia, you don't know. You may see them. Like, I don't know whether you've seen the documentary last week with the man going into his wife, and straight away, the minute she's seen him, she started dancing and moving her round body. That's the type of interaction you need. You don't get that across on Skype. You don't get it across on WhatsApp. It's all about the holding of the hand, Katie. It's the holding of the hand and the reassuring holding. It goes back to when you were a child, when you fell as a child and your mother or your father just grabbed your hand and said, hold on to my hand and you'll be okay.
Yeah. The vaccine bonus then, is there any talk of that in relation to the fact that you have now been, you know, vaccinated with your second dose?
Nothing at all. Now, if you go on to the St James's website, like I've done a look at a few of the hospital websites last night, and it just says due to COVID restrictions, this is the rules that nobody can go in unless in extreme circumstances or you contact the ward manager and stuff like that. But there's no bonus in it. It shouldn't be a bonus. It should be just a case of saying, okay, look, the COVID-19 grant, he's sorted. He's got this. He's got that. We've got this and that in the ward, and then we can allow visitors on this ward. Or I can bring them down to a place where, like in one of the hospitals, they have sort of like booths for the staff to sit and have their meetings. Or I'm sure there's lots of hospitals around the country that have rooms where they're well aired and they can go in there for 20 minutes or 15 minutes. It's just, I'll go back to Katie, it's just the holding of the hand, the reassuring holding of the hand to show that we're supporting you here, we're here with you, and don't give up on us. Don't be waiting until they're on the deathbed and then say, yeah, you can go and see him now.
Yeah. Well said, Philip. Very well said. We'll take a break there. We'll stick with this because I know a lot of people are really distressed because they have loved ones in this situation. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we're going to return to that issue of hospital visits and the restrictions that are still in place in hospitals around the country a little later in the programme. So do get in touch if you have something to add to that conversation. But we'll move on now because another issue that we're getting more and more calls about is random verbal attacks in public places. And we're wondering, is it because there is just more anxiety around generally or what is it all about? Sean Harford, good afternoon to you.
Yes, how are you doing?
Sean, tell us about what happened to your girlfriend on the dart.
Yeah, basically she got on the dart there on Monday morning and she went to sit in a seat. There was no yellow signs to say you can't sit here, this, that and the other. So she proceeded to sit there and there was a lady that was already there. And once she sat down there, the girl must have been holding a lot of anger or something like that, but she just berated my girlfriend with a lot of insults, you know what I mean? And my girlfriend had a mask on and all this type of stuff. So it was like, you're a horrible person, you're this, that and the other. And in a moment, in a split second, she was assaulted.
Okay, so verbally assaulted, we should be clear.
Well, verbally assaulted and she was actually struck. My girlfriend was taking her phone out and the lady struck her phone and it hit her head, you know what I mean? So she was kind of a little bit shook up.
Wind back a bit, Sean. So just she sat down in a seat that she was entitled to sit on. And who was on the same, like sitting opposite her or beside her?
Opposite, I believe.
Opposite. Said what to her first? Like what was it like you shouldn't sit there or?
Yes, she said you can't sit there. But my girlfriend proceeded to sit there. There was no signs. The lady wasn't an Irish Rail authoritative person. So in the moment, it was a barrage of insults.
Like
so my thinking is a lot of people are angry out there and they're holding it in. And as soon as someone crosses their path, they just unleash. You know, we need to get on with it. You know what I mean? And be nice to one another and not be berating people. You know what I mean? There's too much of it going on lately.
But when you say insults, like where did it go from? You can't sit there. Yeah, I'm sitting here. What happened then?
Well, she proceeded to sit down there, and when she was taking out her phone, the lady struck the phone in her hand, and the phone hit into my girlfriend's head. So it wasn't a nice experience for my girlfriend to experience that incident. And, you know, the lady in question, you know, nobody knows what's going on in people's lives, but they need to take a breath back and just, let's all get along here. We can't be berating people for sitting in a seat where they're entitled to sit or whatever the case is, whether it's road rage or anything like that, you know?
And like, how did it wind up? Did your girlfriend move away? Did she make a complaint?
No. She continued to sit there, and it just boiled down, and that was the end of it. So she just went on her journey to work, and that was it. And I'm sure the lady did the same. But, you know, I don't know whether she feels any better for letting loose on her thong, you know.
And you say, like, insults. I don't want you to, you know, if there's bad language, we don't particularly need to be broadcasting it over the airwaves. But, I mean, are we talking about expletives or you know, personal comments? What are we talking about?
Just personal comments, like, you're a horrible, you know, bitch or whatever the case. And, you know, a couple of other horrible comments that, you know what I mean? No woman should be saying it to another woman, you know what I mean?
And there was no, was there alcohol involved, do you think, or...?
No alcohol. It was 7 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And it all happened very quickly, but still, you know what I mean? Like, there's no need for anyone to be stooping themselves down to that level, low level, to insult somebody else.
I've got actually a statement in, was just handed to me here, Sean, from Erin Roth, from Irish Rail, saying that... that they checked with the security centre. They did get a report of this incident yesterday morning. It points out that all the carriages are set up so that there's 50% capacity rule is complied with. And this is done by placing yellow seat coverings or on half our seats.
Yeah.
If there wasn't a yellow covering, and you say there wasn't, then your caller was entitled, or your caller's girlfriend was entitled to sit in the seat. He said, I apologise on behalf of Erin Roth Éireann that this was not the case. Your caller did the correct thing by reporting the incident to our text line 51444. All of these texts go to our centralised security control centre, excuse me, and are escalated to our security contractor. On a more human level, the statement goes on, we would appeal to all of our customers to act in a kind and respectful manner to their fellow passengers. The pandemic has caused people to be more nervous about being in proximity to others, but our advice from the HSE is that if those travelling with us wear their face covering, sanitise their hands regularly, maintain appropriate social distance, the risk of contracting the virus on our services is very low. And that's pretty much the point you're making, Sean, that there is a lot of anxiety and anger, basically, underlying anger around at the moment.
That's right. And there's no need for anyone to be stooping so low, you know. So we just all have to get along, and that's it, you know. And
how's your girlfriend after it?
She's okay, yeah. She's put it all behind her, and she gets on with business, and that's very commend of her, you know what I mean? But, you know, there's others out there that would probably fold and start crying and, you know, be in an awful state if something like that happens, you know. But, you know, people can't talk to other people like that.
It's a very unpleasant way to start your day, I have to say.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's it, you know.
Yeah. I've got Ed on another line. Ed, good afternoon to you.
Hello there, Katie. How are you?
You say that you are used to this sort of carry-on.
Very much so. I work in a supermarket as a checkout operator. I started when the COVID had started off, as I'd been in recovery of an illness myself. And it was my fantastic opportunity for getting back. I have to say 90% of customers that come are absolutely wonderful. Get to know them by name. I'm a very dutiful person for my job. It's very important to me. It's really my only social outlook in these current days. Mm-hmm. The abuse, I'm not just speaking for myself, but speaking for many others in not just my own workplace, but in having done my research with many friends who are in similar positions as myself. The abuse we get is absolutely horrific.
Really?
The abuse we get is dreadful. That it even came down to yesterday was the worst of it.
What happened yesterday?
People have lost the run of themselves when it comes with social distancing. I've only had my first vaccine there early last week, so still waiting for my second. I do suffer with anxiety in general, and I have a lot of things kind of going on, but I hold my head up high. Mm-hmm. But people are just, especially it happened yesterday at my workplace, social distancing has gone out the window. not just with my till, but with a few others, people cramming up fours and fives, trying to push all their shopping on top of each other, walk on top of each other. I had a lovely lady at my till, first of all, and a little bit of banter. How are you? How is your day? People then crowding up on top. No control. We are a little bit down on staff at the moment, but holidays, days off and things like that. It's unusually quite busy earlier in the week these days. Mm-hmm. Next thing, a barrage of people up on top. The nice lady was talking to, she got a bit wary. She mentioned, oh, social distancing has gone out the window. Is there anything to be done? I mentioned to the other people, would you mind just adhering to the social distancing, thinking of respect for her and mm-hmm. for them and for myself. The torrent of abuse, insults, bad language just absolutely set me into the ground.
So this was the person queuing up behind the nice woman you were serving?
Four people.
There was four, and were they all together?
I'm not to know who is which, but whereas there was two people that weren't together, there was a separation of two people behind the third lady. Mm-hmm. And then what she roared at me about was using foul language and everything, said they were family. They were all together. I said, I'm sorry, I'm not to know that. I'm not meant to know that. We're not psychic. Yeah. But the torrent of abuse. Then, of course, the first lady was very nervous. She was just kind of, oh, I'm sorry if I caused anything. I said, no, you're doing what is right for you. Don't you worry about that. She gave me a big smile. She said, you're fantastic, and went off.
And then you had to deal with the people coming out.
And then I had to deal with two strangers and one with her daughters. And they effing and blinding and all that. I had two of my work colleagues, one behind me and one in a till opposite me, who saw this. They were horrified at the level of abuse I got.
And would that be an extreme example now of what you've been putting up with, Ed?
We have put up with numerous things. Another work colleague before even had a woman at her till, even on her mobile phone. I'm just getting my shopping and I'm on the way from my COVID test.
For my COVID test?
So this on her way to get a COVID test. Oh, this was a number of weeks back.
Right.
There's very little respect. I mean, basically, we're only a number in our jobs. I have one of my best friends is a junior manager in another well-known supermarket brand. And she moved to this job, particularly to be near her father, who was extremely, extremely ill after COVID, a very healthy man. So she moved to this other job to be near to home to look after her dad. She ended up leaving her job because of it.
Because of the abuse?
Because of the abuse.
And is it something particularly directed at supermarket staff, do you think?
I'll be very honest, what I feel myself, this is my own personal belief, everybody's entitled to their view. I think just people have lost the run of themselves and just haven't. They just don't realise, you know, like as one of your previous callers had said, people have other stuff going on in their lives, you know, but they just take it out where we're treated like dirt. Now, I have to congratulate, like, I work with a wonderful bunch of colleagues. My management team are wonderful, but at the end of the day, they have to adhere by what the top people say. So you can't fault them. Top people, that our people would have to go by what the top people say, and we have to go, and we feel very vulnerable, and we feel very, I'm off today, but I came home after work last night, and I just was really, my anxiety was gone through the roof completely.
I'm not surprised, I mean, nobody should have to put up with that,
whether
in your place of work or in any situation.
We put up with it, we deal with it, we carry on as best with the smile, and then it's kind of just all drafted over, we'd be questioned about it, and then we're told what, X, Y, and Z, and then that's it. I'm living, like, I just live dreading in fear now of having to attend a job that I love doing. And for €10.99 an hour, it's very little for what we have to put up with.
That's... I don't know what to say to you, Ed, because I mean, I honestly thought that there was a renewed respect for people in the job you do and the people who kept the show on the road for us right through this pandemic. And that's shocking.
No, we're just numbers. We're just numbers in it. I have colleagues that are backing me up over the situation yesterday, but, you know, which they're wonderful about. But at the end of the day, we just don't really have a voice. We're just really just numbers against the euros that go into the tills.
Basically, what you can tell them is, you ask the person, "Will you be here next week? Will you be here next week?" And they get all excited. Yeah, I'll be in with a big smile. Yeah, we say what you say is, "Well, don't forget your manners because you didn't show it right there." You know what I mean? That's exactly what you tell them. Bring your manners with you the next time you're
but
coming
in. Presumably Ed can't. I presume there's protocols. You can't answer back, really, can you? In those scenarios?
No. Oh, you can always say it in a nice way, but I agree with them. The staff at these supermarkets and things have been fabulous through all this pandemic, and they've done us proud. You know what I mean? Through thick and thin, they've been there. You know, and there's no way for them to treat like, you know, cashiers like that. You know.
Yeah.
This is what we get a lot of. If they're in, if they're in a queue, they're complaining about it.
Yes,
if they want to call, when they get up to the till, we get the backlash of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And what are you told by your managers, Ed, in terms of how are you supposed to respond if you are the victim of this sort of a tirade of abuse?
To be very honest, I don't think any of us know what to do, because we get one roof for one and another roof for another, and that's across the board. I'm not specifying where I work. I'm specifying from a lot of feedback that I've gotten from good friends of mine who are in similar positions wherever they're working. And nobody knows where they stand. Nobody. I don't know where I'm standing. My anxiety is through the roof today. I'm literally housebound myself today, nearly afraid to even go off out because with this. You just don't know. It's just like living to work and you're just working to live. And in my case, my working is what my life is at the moment.
And, you know, you say your colleagues were really supportive of you yesterday.
Absolutely wonderful. They were like, "What caught you? Know, kind of look, go off for a few minutes." I said, "No, I'm on my break in about 20 minutes. Let's get the show rolling, put the smile back up." But literally, I was crumbling inside.
Okay, Ed, I hope that support helps you and gets you back in there, because that is an outrageous situation that you should have to put up with that even once, let alone on an ongoing basis.
Well, it's basically, I'm just kind of putting on a critical name that I'm calling it, is just public bullying.
Yeah.
This is the only word I can think, public bullying.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. I mean, basically the cheek, and how dare people just think they can overrun, threaten me with reporting when all I did was just to try to adhere with what social distancing to protect all around, including myself.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if I caught COVID, and Lord forbid, touch wood, like, you know, touch wood, it wouldn't happen, but if I ended up in hospital and life support, I'm replaceable.
Let's hope I don't shed a few tears, but I'm sure she'll understand if I get a bit sobby, but I'll do me best.
Okay. I didn't know that was a bit of a breakthrough there. Ed.
Yeah, I was wondering who that was. Sorry.
We have a ghost in the system. Ed, I'm going to leave you go. Thank you so much for that call. And I hope people out there will hear that and will think again and think twice.
And thank you very much for highlighting it. I really appreciate it, Katie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's affecting a lot of us as well. I know there's so much being said and they're wonderful about, let's say, the medical and the hospital team. But in the smaller kind of the lines, like in my lines, we're just as much affected. No more than that poor lady on the train, no more than that poor gentleman about his uncle. I was close to tears listening to that. But kindness has gone out the window. I've discovered that Irish people can be so self-centred. Yeah. The Cade Mila Fáilte is gone. It's just the self-centeredness of people and rudeness and ignorance. Yes, there is a pandemic going on. Hopefully we're seeing light at the end of the tunnel, but it's still going on. Give us a chance to breathe, no more than we would call, we respect them people to have a chance to breathe in the public.
Yeah, well said, well said. Okay, we'll take that break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And returning now to that issue of hospital visits, or rather restrictions on hospital visits. Penny Hayes, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. Very nice to speak to you.
Penny, I think we might have heard you briefly a few seconds ago. Tell us your story.
Well, my story was in December of 2020. Unfortunately, I lost two beautiful sisters, one the 1st and one the 14th.
Oh, I'm very, very sorry, Penny. That's a huge blow.
Thank you, Katie, very much. And on the 3rd, my sister was to be buried on the 4th. And I couldn't wake him, Michael. So I rang the emergency services and they thought he was after taking a massive stroke.
This is your husband, is it?
My husband, Michael, yes.
Okay.
So they took him into James, of course, and that was at the height of the pandemic in James, which I understood. So we come on from the 3rd and he was still very ill up for about a week. And then he started to come around. And I really want to concur what that gentleman said. The lack of touch, talk, whether we were to sing, say a little bit of a poem, whatever, that lack was absolutely dreadful. But my big but is this. The care my husband got in that MISA unit, in the Patrick Kavanagh ward, he wouldn't have got the care, the love from the staff, and also then, as he got well, he was put in then to a ward where he either go home, but Michael had to go to a nursing home, which I accepted. And he was put into the Kilmainham ward, which he was then in. And then we got into a very nice nursing home. And then he took another turn in the nursing home about 5 or 6 weeks ago, got the doctor, shifted back into the MISA unit, again, the care, blah, blah. But no contact whatsoever till my husband, which we were sent for on the Monday, and from the Tuesday, he was dying. And from Tuesday until my husband passed away on the 7th, the day after his birthday, that was the contact we had with my husband, that he couldn't. Well, I'm sure he knew we were there because the love we gave Michael. I only have a beautiful son, and we were there. My son slept on the latter part of Michael's life, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And as the staff said, if love could have saved Michael from you, Mrs. Hayes, and your beautiful son, Paul, Michael would never have died. But it's the contact of that gentleman said, the touch, the feel, the holding of the hands. I was vaccinated and Michael was vaccinated.
But you couldn't get in.
Couldn't get in. Up to we got the sad call to come that Michael was dying. And that is factual case. Yeah.
Penny, I just want to say, I to lose your sisters and then to go through this with your husband and think he was out, turned the corner and to lose him like this is, I'm just so, so sorry.
And as that gentleman said, that every spirit in my beautiful husband of 53 years, and with him for about 4 before we got married, I can tell you one thing, Katie. My whole life was around my husband and his life was around me. That's all I can say. And as he went through, and I know he's in a better place today, and as I said, my final farewell to him, I said, I know I was always loved, and I know you were always loved. But all I ask is to continue your love, support, and get me through this sad and difficult time. But I know he will, Katie, because he was a good man, very good man, and a very good father.
So just come back to when was he readmitted to hospital from the nursing home then, Penny? Just
about
so
5 weeks before he died, Katie. He took a bit of a turn in the nursing home. They got a doctor and they got him straight back in. And he was lucky he got straight back in to the unit.
Right.
Absolutely magnificent. That MISA unit, the staff in the Patrick Cavanagh ward and the staff in the Kilmainham ward, I have nothing but praise. And please God, I said to Pop, my son, I will go personally when all this is over, and I will feel that I'll be given adoration to these people that have gone through so much with the COVID pandemic and the lives they were looking after and no doubt saving. I'm not saying I'm the unlucky one that Michael wasn't, but I will say one thing. I will praise him for the rest of my life. And that's the way I feel about that MISA unit. Yeah. Absolutely. A five-class hotel wouldn't be anything like that unit that older people are put into. And I'm glad they're not mixed with other people. Beautiful. Absolutely, Katie. Yeah. I couldn't have asked for a better place for Michael to take his final breath as where he was.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But over those 5 weeks then, and as you say, you know, you obviously are so grateful for the care he got over those 5 weeks.
Yes.
But how often did you see him then?
I didn't see him. Paul saw him in those 5 weeks. My son saw him three times. And from it really broke out from Christmas, because I was so down about my two sisters. They let Paul in twice a week. And then when it really broke for about 3 months, and one of the staff, she was a beautiful person. She was head over nursing. She said the day that Paul was allowed in to see him, it was like the girl went and said, your son is here, Michael. And she said, Michael ran down the corridor, and he was a very strong fella. And she said, they never saw such a beautiful thing the way he embraced Paul, and Paul just said, Dad, I'm here. It was like to say, where are you after being, son? I haven't seen you. You know what I mean?
I'm just thinking as well, of course, because of what happened after Christmas with the COVID cases, you probably weren't allowed into the nursing home either, were you?
Nothing. Absolutely. He didn't go to the nursing home, Katie, until Holy Thursday. And I saw him twice in the nursing home. And then the next time I saw him, he was dying.
In the hospital?
The hospital, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I'm saying before that, were you able to see him when he was in the nursing home before that?
Twice.
Just twice.
Yeah, and that was, he went to the nursing home on Holy Thursday. He was put into isolation, even though he had one vax. He was put into isolation and I understood that. So within the next 2 weeks, I got an hour. Would say I went from six to seven, because I said it would break the evening for him. I could have went up, we'll say, because I'm here where I live. It's not far where we're the north. So I could have went the first thing in the morning. I said, no, they have these little activities. So I go from six to seven. I saw Michael twice.
So twice in the nursing home,
yes.
And just once in the hospital,
yes,
before he passed
away. The next time I saw Michael was dying.
And could you talk to him? Was he able to talk to you on the phone or on FaceTime or, you know?
He'd done a little bit of FaceTime. I haven't got that facility here, but Paul is techie, the tech engineer. So he could, to Paul, and bits and pieces, he was, you know, because he took a mass, they thought it was a massive stroke, but it was a massive seizure. But they thought he could have been in it from the time he got into bed on the Wednesday evening. And I found him on the Thursday morning, on the 3rd of December, just non-responsive.
Mm-hmm.
And from there then, he was, so that was December, and he went to the nursing home the end of March. And then we saw him twice up there because of the COVID, you know, and then...
And then once again. And were you able to get his things into him, or did he have his things around him?
Oh, God, yes. What you done was, they would tell you, to bring in his... They would give you all his dirty laundry, and we bring all his clean laundry, and the nursing home was exactly the same.
Yeah.
No different. No, you know, I'm talking about no difference. Certainly the care, I would never have anything but the height of praise for that MISA unit.
Yeah.
I said, bless all your hands, because they were wonderful, wonderful people, from the catering staff that got to know Michael to the highest of the highest staff down there. Absolutely.
And I'm just thinking, 53 years married.
Yes.
And
1968 I was married.
Well,
September. Yes.
And you say you were together four years before that?
Well, you know, all them years ago, there was no living together, there was no this together, there was no that together. You showed your love the way you wanted to show your love, which I done, and I know Michael knew, even leaving this world behind him, I know in my whole heart that Michael knew he was absolutely loved and adored. That's all I can say.
I'm sure he did, Penny. I'm sure he did.
Oh, I know he did. Because he fought too hard to stay with Katie. He fought too hard to stay with.
And the staff, I mean, I do think it's so difficult on the staff as well, because it's, you know, they must appreciate having family and loved ones in, and what that does for patients. So it must be so difficult for them to not have that.
Correct. You have said it, Katie. You have said it. And it would give them a little breather, that those that need constant looking after and constant watching, they would have appreciated that. And as the gentleman said, it was only to go into beautiful rooms down there, or say, we'll go outside and I'll make sure I'll take it, that lovely all around there where the blood bank and all of that is, all those beautiful grounds, beautiful seating, like, yeah. And we had lovely weather, like that. Yeah, it's like you're on a conveyor. Michael was on a conveyor belt, and we were on a conveyor belt. But it's understandable. I understood it. I mean, I understood it from the point of the virus. But then when we heard like Michael vaccinated, I'm vaccinated. You know, why was I not let in when I could have sat with him and enjoyed, as that gentleman said, 20 minutes, a half an hour. Now you have to go. It was the same in the nursing home, an hour. They would come in and just say, 3 minutes to 7, you have to do this. Don't ask me. But anyway, you were told you have to go, and you go. You're told your visit is from 4 to 5, 5 to whatever, an hour. And then you go. And that's the way life was for me for the last 6 months. Only, as I said, I only saw him twice in the nursing home. And then I had to sit with him when he was dying. Yeah. That, like, I knew myself, he knew we were there. But they had him so sedated, of course, that he didn't talk at all.
Yeah.
But I said, and I, you know, we said bits and pieces and went back to happy days and loads of happy days when we met and different things we'd done and all the holidays we had and, you know, I brought back any memory I could, and Paul done the same. My son done the same.
Yeah.
Much love. A much-loved husband, father, and he idolised his granddaughter, absolutely idolised.
Yeah.
Came into her life 10 years ago. He idolised her. And she idolised her. And she idolised him. That's all I... She used to call him about 2 years, 2 years old, and she came in and said, I'm not calling you grand anymore. And he said, why not, missy? I'm going to call you my Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. And Michael said to her, you call me what you like. And that was what she called him.
Yeah.
She idolised him.
It sure sounds like you idolised him yourself, Penny.
Oh, no, Katie, I tell you, Michael was a very good man, a very good father, a very good provider. I can tell you that much. A wonderful man. A wonderful, wonderful man he was. But as I said, I say to him there, look at that. I got one of my wedding photographs blown up. Because I said, I took you in sickness and health. And now I said, I'm departing you in death. So I said to Paul, that is the photograph I took your daddy nearly 53 years ago. And he said, are you sure? I said, I'm 150% sure that is the photograph that I want blown up to show with pride the man I took 53 years ago. And that's the way I felt a couple of days of saying, what photograph? And I just said, I'm getting my wedding album down. That is the photograph I want with your daddy. So I said to him, you know, it was one of the happiest days of my life, Michael, and I hope it was one of the happy days of your life. I just spoke to him upstairs and I said, well, All I say to you is now, I took you for better or worse, and in sickness and health, death do us part. And this is the photograph I want people to know, that I loved you and you loved me. So that's what I done, Katie. I just said, that's exactly what I looked like the morning I was getting married to you. One of the happiest days of my life. And today it's one of the saddest, but I know deep down you will always be with me. You will always look over and protect me. And that's all I ask of him, Katie, today. And I say to you, Michael, may you rest in peace. You'll always be loved.
Penny, our condolences again.
Thanks, Katie, very much. And God bless you.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Luke, good afternoon to you.
Hey, how's it going, Katie?
Good, good. You work in construction.
Yeah, I'm a qualified electrician. I went over to Switzerland to work during the pandemic. And I decided to come home because everything was opening up and I've saved money for a house. And so I said to myself, I may as well come home. You know, all the construction sites were opening up. I could get work, no problem. I came home and realised that my safe pass ran out in December 2020. Obviously, you're not in the EU, it's Switzerland. So I didn't need it over there.
And just to explain to people about the safe pass, Luke.
Yeah, so the safe pass is just it's safety on construction sites course. It's an all day course, very simple questions. It lasts 4 years, and obviously when the pandemic hit, everyone was out of work for a year and a half. So I think the amount of them that ran out or expired in that time,
because there was no courses being run during that time.
No, and even now today, they're still run very limited. There's a couple of companies that haven't even opened back up yet or anything because you have to go into a classroom to do them.
Right. So you are now in a situation where you don't have an up-to-date safe pass.
Yeah.
And that means you can't work, does it?
I can't work now on construction sites in Ireland. But the government did have an exception. I heard from a man that was running the safe pass saying that if it ran out after the pandemic hit, after the lockdown hit, and you had one booked and you had a date, you can go back to site until you have it. So I done all that. It's also doubled in price. It used to be €90. It's now €185, and they take €100 off you just to hold your name and the date that you had. So when I done it 2 weeks ago, it was, I think the cost I got was the 26th of July. Now, I told them that I was on a site that won't accept the exception, so they did get me down to the 16th of July.
Right.
But it was still six weeks away from the time.
And this is a course that as you say, you have to go into a classroom to do, is it?
Yeah, well, you shouldn't have to, because it's very simple. You could just, you have to do inductions now to get onto sites where they record your picture to make sure you're sitting in front of the camera. And, people are doing their masters all over the world in third level education online, but you can't do a day course of something you've already done before. I'd understand if it was someone that never done it before, but people that have done it two and three times, I don't know why they can't just do it online. You know, there's now a couple of hundred, maybe 1,000 people that can't go back to work, that are claiming the PUP and want to go back to work, but they just can't because they can't get a safe pass date.
Because there's a backlog now.
Yeah, there's a backlog of nearly 2 months.
And when you say there's no reason, I mean, is there any practical things that are happening in this course?
At the end, you do a test. But in the three times I've done it, I've never seen anyone fail the test. People that have very little English and everything. So it's very simple. It's more, it's a complete, just tick the box, very simple questions.
And this is basically questions like, where do you need to wear a hard hat? And
yeah, and what do you do in the event of a fire and stuff? And I understand, and maybe if someone got the questions wrong, then they'd have to go in. But I don't see why people couldn't sit at home on their laptop, do it. And if they get the pass, then they get a little certificate and email, and then back to work you go the next day.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we don't want to cut any corners when it comes to stuff like safety, health and safety on construction sites. But as you say, most people will have done this course more than once already.
More than once, two, three, four, sometimes five times for some people.
And is it that there's, you know, safety measures change, or like why the need to do it every 4 years?
I'm not too sure. It's probably just in case something did change, but It's just an EU safety certificate to say you can work on site. You know, people might have been off site for a long time. But it's the most online course you could do, and you can't do it online.
And have you asked about the possibility of doing it online? What are they saying about it?
No, I was just told this is what it is, and this is the day we can give you. And if you don't take it now, it'll change. Because I went to look for it, say, on a Friday, and my dad said, I might know someone that can get it for you. Wait till Monday to book it. And when I went on Monday, it was, say, Friday lunchtime, and then by Monday lunchtime, it had gone up by a week and a half. So I just had to take the date that I got.
Yeah. God, and I suppose everyone knows how hard it is to get somebody to do a job in the house now, let alone all the house building and all the other office blocks.
These sites are opening up and they're crying out for lads, and they can't get on now because of such a simple course that takes a day, that you could just, if you've done it online, you could be back to work the next day. But now it's 2 months for some people.
And how long have you been home, Luke?
I came home at the mid-May, and because I was working in Switzerland, so I took 2 weeks off, and then I said I'd go back to work, and then that's when I realised, I noticed that I'm also actually setting up a social media company from Ireland, so I was only planning on doing it for another couple of months, and hopefully that'll kick off very soon.
Yeah, but as you say, you found yourself stuck.
Yeah, I found myself stuck, and I didn't even realise that it would be that long. You know, it's never. Usually, it was just if you needed it, you'd book it, and it was the next day thing. I didn't anticipate the fact there'd be a two month waiting list.
Yeah, and as you say, any idea of how many people are out there? I wonder that are still waiting
for
this.
I'm not sure, but the company I was going to start with said there's a load of people that have the same issue.
Yeah. God, it seems like such a simple thing that,
and
as you say,
simple.
People drawing the PUP payment if they can't get back onto
that's
site.
That's exactly it. Like, so think of all those people then that are stuck, and they just, you know, it's not even about that. People are dying to get back to work. They've been stuck in their homes for the last year and a half, and such a simple formality means that they can't go back to work.
Okay. Well, look. Thanks for raising that with us. I hadn't,
no problem.
I hadn't come across it before, but it's obviously an issue that could be fixed, as you say, quite simply, if they decided to put this stuff online.
I've never done it before. Have to go into the classrooms, but then again, that would open that up for them if people could just do it online if they've done it before.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then that means you're getting the people that really need it that haven't done it before. They're going into the classrooms, and then they're getting their starts as well.
Yeah. Okay. All about solutions here. Thank you for that, Luke. We'll take another break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And going back to that issue raised by Ed, who was working behind the till in a supermarket, and the abuse that he described getting. James, good afternoon to you.
How you doing, Katie? How are you?
You know exactly where Ed was coming from.
Yes, unfortunately I do. Around 2 years ago, I actually left the retail trade because of verbal abuse. I was working for a company who supply building products. So we would have a lot of builders, you know, and different trades coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one particular day, I remember a builder came in. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not branding all builders like this, but one particular gentleman came in, and we didn't even say anything to him. He wanted the price on some products, and he just started a tyrant of abuse at me because he wouldn't speak to me. He wanted to speak to his sales representative, who wasn't available at the time, and he just said I tried to appease him, I tried to get him prices, and at the time we had I had a co-worker with me, and they tried to appease him, give him the prices, but he just said, no, you're too expensive, and he just started abuse and said he's going to report me to the head office, and that he, you know, he'll have me job, and like, what else could we do in that situation? But he was asked to leave the shop, and he didn't come back when I was there, but I don't know whether he has come back since. But it's that type of abuse, Katie, that I can relate with, just listening to Ed there this afternoon. It is very, very demoralising when you're being subject to that abuse just for doing your job.
Yeah, and like we were putting a certain amount of it down to the pandemic and the anxiety.
No, this is
pre-pandemic.
This has gone on, Katie, for, I'd say, probably around Celtic Tiger times. You know, my experience, and I was working previously in a major retailer, and I could even see it then, the way some people would, you know, talk to retail workers, you know, they would almost talk down to them. You know, as if, you know, you're not, you know, as if we weren't good enough, you know, for them. But we were only serving them and, you know, trying to get them a good service.
And is this idea, you know, we've heard it before, the customer is always right. Is that something that isn't helpful in this situation?
No, because I don't believe that at all, Katie. I believe in giving customers good service, being courteous, being friendly, try and help them as best you can. You know, I agree with all that, but there is a line as well. You know, if a customer is being abusive to you, you know, is shouting verbal abuse at you, that has to be a red line issue. You know, it has to be a line there, you know, where you have to say, you know, there has to be consequences for those actions, especially when they're uncalled for.
And would your managers, you know, stick up for you in those situations?
See, the problem was, Katie, there was never a manager there. Mm. You know, you were the manager of the shop, in essence, even though you were just a supervisor. You know, there was, you know, you would bring them up, you would email them the incident or whatever, but it would be taken on board, but it was just kind of, you know, just leave it there, you know.
Yeah.
There'd be nothing, there'd be no follow-up to it.
Yeah. I've got Michael on another line. Michael, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, Michael, you were calling in relation to this as well.
Yeah, well look, I was just listening to Ed earlier on and listened to what he had to go through doing his normal day's work. These people are national heroes. They have been on the front line since the start of the pandemic. You look at the nurses and doctors in the hospital, and they've looked after the sick people in the hospital. These people in supermarkets have looked after us healthy people. They've been there every single day since the pandemic started. You know,
well
at the start of the pandemic, people were made work from home where they were safe. Like the shop assistants and other people working in retail, they never got that option in supermarkets and that. They faced the pandemic every single day, probably for an amount of money less than the PUP weekly, as Ed said, $10.99 an hour. You know, like, yeah. And Ed, just to talk about Ed as well, Ed went to work every single day. He had his own issues in relation to anxiety and things like that, but he still went there, faced people every single day. It couldn't have been easy for him. And yet, he's there doing his job, as your previous caller just said there, serving the customers, being friendly, doing the best for their customers, and yet he gets that abuse. That is just totally uncalled for. When, and I'm sure there will be an event at some stage down the road when the nurses and doctors are going to be honoured. We have to make sure that shop assistants in supermarkets and other shops get the same recognition.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Agree, yeah.
Could
absolutely
not agree more.
Yeah.
It's so disgraceful to hear these stories of abuse when we should be so grateful for the service that they've put in at such a difficult time. I want to bring in Rosie. Rosie, good afternoon.
Hello there. Well, first of all, I want to say that I live alone. I adhere to all the regulations, and the traffic outside had actually stopped. It was like living in the country. Now, just if you bear with me, the relevancy was the birds outside. I could actually hear them. I could feed them. And I said to myself, when we begin to go back, when we're allowed to go back shopping and whatever, things are going to be much better because people will have realised and will have thought about life, and that things will people will be nicer. And a couple of my friends, you know, on the phone would say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that. I live in South City. Let's say South City. Because if I said where I lived, it would be too obvious. Regarding Ed, I back him up. First of all, I got on very, very well with all the people that work on the tills. There's nobody that's been rude to me. But I myself, I don't want to go into this and waste your time, but I had a very, very bad accident on a path, but it's left me that my dominant hand, shoulder and all that isn't working. You can imagine when you're trying to go at your fastest, it's the quickest, I just throw in my key to get my points, and then I have to try and get it. I cannot able to carry
much. I'm picturing you now. You're
okay,
trying to get your messages along. And
hello,
yeah.
I just say hello, what time are you off? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not. They're not adhering to the, and it's in most of the supermarkets, they're not adhering. They're coming up right up to the belt, dumping their stuff.
You're talking about other customers now, Rosie?
I am, sorry.
Yeah.
Pull me back if I go off.
Yeah, so...
One particular, just to give you an idea, one particular woman came up. And she told me to F off when I said, could you go back? Because, the people working the tills in certain shops are told not to get involved. There's no management around. I can't find it when I need it. But it's just that maybe big, tall men don't find this. I don't know. But this is one of many. Woman came up and I just said it to her and I said, sorry, you'll have to stand back. Now, she saw me, and she must have seen, because I have a walking stick at the moment. She must have seen. But she dumped the kid on the belt, and the child was screaming. She shoved all her stuff up. I'm allowing for being... I just ignored her. But she effed and seed and you name all the words. Another instance was very large. I shouldn't say this, but she was. She was a very large lady. And I was coming up a very narrow passage and I moved over double for her. And I have to really watch how I walk. I'm terrified of falling again. And I just caught her bracelet. Well, she turned around and what she didn't call me, and she was with her husband, boyfriend, partner, doesn't matter to me. And I said, I lost it with her. I just actually lost it. And I said, how dare you? I double distanced for you. And she said, again, I can't say the language over the air, but you can imagine, effing, get yourself on Xanax. So it was funny because she actually mentioned a particular type of, which would be seen, she might have been on it. But also, children are allowed on scooters, and the scooters are whizzing around. Now, that maybe wouldn't have worried me, but I always thought about elderly people. And I'm called elderly. I don't feel it, but I do feel it now at the moment because I'm very vulnerable if that arm gets hit.
Yeah.
You know, again. The other thing is crossing the road, the zebra crossing. When you're going across that, the cars have got so angry now, they don't stop. They go before it's turned. When they know it's going to turn, they just whiz past you.
Right.
Also, you have scooters. People in general have become very, very rude.
Okay, can I just...
Another thing was a
Rosie, don't want to cut across you, but I want to try and sneak in, Catherine, we were in the last minute of the show, because I think people will be happy to hear that management don't all turn the other cheek, as they say. Catherine, you've two shops.
Yes, hi, Katie. We've two off-licences in Mulhudded and Tyrrellstown. And I find that if you have a customer coming in and the customer is very rude to the staff, you can't have that. So you ask them to leave. Now, what I have found in the past is sometimes that the customer will actually come back and they'll say, listen, I had a really rough day, I'm really sorry, or whatever. Oh. And I've even had a phone call from a customer to say, listen, you know, such a thing was going on, I didn't mean to be like that, will you pass on the apologies to the staff? And I thought that was a good thing to do. But you can't put up with that. You have to look after your staff. Those guys are there day in, day out. When everybody else was at home, working from home or whatever, or indeed you can go into a store and you can turn around and you can walk straight out, but staff cannot do that. They are in that store for their full shift.
Yeah, and so they have to be protected.
Exactly. And a little bit of kindness and, you know, a little bit of thought, from the customer. And, then everybody is happy at the end of it.
Indeed. And so say all of us. Catherine, we have to go. Thank you so much. Glad to hear that you take that view. And glad to hear some people do come back with an apology for that kind of behaviour. Today's show was produced by Sian O'Gorman. Research was by Andrew Fleming. Sound was by Kieran Dunn. And our BCO today was Daniel Keating. But do stand by for Catherine Thomas now.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.